Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive. Today we're going to be looking at the Beatitudes,
Oh.
but with a bit of a twist.
Oh.
Yeah, instead of looking at a passage from the Bible and kind of working through it verse by verse, we're actually going to be looking at a lecture by Dr. Bill Mounts,
Okay.
where he goes through the Beatitudes, and it's from a series that he did on the Sermon on the Mount. So it's kind of neat because it's like getting to hear straight from the mouth of, well, obviously not Jesus, but a really, really knowledgeable scholar who is looking at the words of Jesus directly and not going through like the Pauline lens or anything like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. I
Yeah.
like that.
So our mission today is to kind of try to figure out like what these blessings really mean. What are they telling us about like how to live a Christian life and how they can transform our lives?
Yeah, I'm excited to jump in.
Me too. Let's do it. So one of the first things that Dr. Mounts talks about in his lecture is this idea that the Beatitudes are not just like a checklist. Right.
Right. It's not just like, okay, do this, do this, do this, and then like you'll be blessed or something like that.
Right.
He actually refers to them as a golden chain.
Oh,
Like
wow.
they're all linked together and they build upon one
That's a
another.
cool image.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's really helpful because it helps us to see that you can't just like cherry pick the ones that you like, or the ones that you think are easy to do.
Exactly.
You have to kind of embrace the whole thing.
A whole package.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a really challenging, but also really rewarding way to approach the Beatitudes.
It makes you think about them in a new light, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So, before we really get into like the meat of the Beatitudes, I wanted to share just a really quick, funny anecdote from Dr. Mounts's lecture.
Okay.
So he's talking about the blessings,
Yeah.
and how each one kind of leads to the next.
And he gets to the end and he's like, oh, and then there's the promise of heaven. Like in Revelation 21:4, it talks about how God will wipe away every tear and there'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. And then he just stops and he's like, oh, shoot, I forgot the verse.
Oh no.
And he had to like pull up his digital Bible to find it.
That's hilarious.
I know, right? It was just this really human moment,
It makes him relatable.
Yeah, totally. And it's also kind of funny because like a lot of people in the audience were like, oh, I have that verse memorized, but they were all using different Bible software,
Oh, makes sense.
like some people were using Logos and some people were using YouVersion.
Right.
And it just kind of shows how like even though we're all studying the same Bible, we all have our own like preferences and ways of approaching it.
Yeah, that's true. Technology has definitely changed the way we study the Bible.
For sure. Okay, so let's dive into that first beatitude. Blessed are the poor in spirit. So what does that even mean? Poor in spirit.
Yeah, that's a good question because when you first hear it, it sounds kind of negative.
Right.
Like, who wants to be poor?
Yeah.
But Dr. Mounts explains that it's not about material poverty,
Okay.
it's about recognizing our spiritual bankruptcy.
Our spiritual bankruptcy, what do you mean?
It's acknowledging that we're completely dependent on God,
Ah, oh, okay.
that we can't do anything on our own without His grace.
So it's like a posture of humility. It's
Exactly.
recognizing that we need God.
Yeah, it's like coming to God with empty hands,
Empty hands.
saying, I need you.
Okay, so that's kind of like the foundation then for all the other Beatitudes.
I think so.
Yeah.
Because without that humility, without that recognition of our need for God, we can't really move forward.
It's like the starting point.
It's the starting point.
Yeah. Okay, so then the next Beatitude is, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted.
Okay.
Mourning. That's not exactly a topic that gets people excited for church.
No, not really.
But Dr. Mounts actually challenges us with a pretty pointed question. He asks, when was the last time you truly mourned over your sin?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
It is, right. And he makes the point that genuine repentance goes beyond just saying sorry.
Right.
It involves a deep sorrow for how our actions have grieved God.
Like a real brokenness over our sin.
Exactly. And I think that's something that we often miss,
Yeah, we can be quick to gloss over the seriousness of sin.
Yeah, we want to just kind of like move on and forget about it.
But true repentance involves mourning.
Yeah, and I think that mourning is actually what leads to the comfort that's promised in the Beatitude.
That makes sense because it's through that brokenness that we can experience God's healing and restoration.
And it's not about wallowing in guilt or shame either.
Right.
It's about allowing ourselves to feel the weight of our sin and then turning to God for forgiveness.
It's about moving towards healing and wholeness.
Exactly. So how does this like mourning for our sin play out in real life,
Well, Dr. Mounts actually shares a personal story in his lecture that I think really illustrates this.
Oh, what is it?
So he was a pastor at a church, and one day he was approached by a church member who accused him of being power hungry.
Ooh, that's gotta hurt.
Yeah, it did. And he talks about how he initially felt defensive and angry.
I bet.
But then he realized that he needed to examine his own heart.
Oh, wow.
He needed to ask himself, is there any truth to this accusation? Is there any part of me that is seeking power or control?
So it was like a moment of self-reflection.
Yeah, it was. And it was painful.
I can imagine.
But it was also necessary because it allowed him to see his own sin and to repent.
And that led to growth.
Exactly. It led to healing and growth and a deeper dependence on God.
Wow. That's a powerful example.
Yeah, it really shows how these Beatitudes aren't just theoretical concepts. They're meant to be lived out in the messy reality of our lives.
Absolutely. And it's in those messy moments that we often see the most growth.
For sure. So moving on to the third Beatitude, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth.
Okay, so meekness. That's another one of those words that can be a bit tricky, you know?
Yeah, it's often misunderstood.
Right, like people think it means being weak or passive.
Exactly. But Dr. Mounts challenges that notion.
Okay, what does he say?
He says that meekness is actually strength under control.
Strength under control.
Yeah, he uses the analogy of a wild stallion that has been tamed.
Oh, okay.
The stallion still has its power and strength, but it's now under the control of the rider.
So it's not about suppressing our strength.
No.
But surrendering it to God's guidance.
Exactly. And that's where the true strength lies.
That's powerful.
And the promise attached to this beatitude is pretty amazing. They will inherit the earth.
Oh, okay. So what does that mean?
Well, that's a phrase that has sparked a lot of debate.
I bet.
Some people interpret it literally.
Like we're going to get actual land.
Yeah, like a physical inheritance in the new creation.
Interesting.
Others see it more symbolically.
Okay.
Like inheriting a spiritual kingdom, experiencing God's reign in our hearts and lives.
So there's room for different interpretations.
Definitely. But I think the core idea is that meekness, that strength under God's control, leads to a profound sense of belonging and purpose.
Like we're not striving for earthly power or control, but trusting God to guide us to our ultimate inheritance.
Precisely.
Okay, so that's meekness, strength under control, leading to an inheritance. We're not quite sure what that is.
Right.
But it's good.
It's good.
Okay, so what's next?
The fourth beatitude, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled.
Ooh, hunger and thirst.
Yeah, those are strong words.
Like they convey a deep longing, a real craving.
Exactly. And that's the point Dr. Mounts emphasizes, that true righteousness is not about a casual approach to faith.
Oh, okay.
It's about a passionate pursuit of God's will.
So it's not about just like dabbling in spirituality.
No, it's about craving a deep and abiding connection with God.
Like a hunger and thirst that can only be satisfied by him.
Precisely.
I like that with
him. And Dr. Mounts actually uses this really colorful phrase. He says, it's not about nibbling and sipping on God.
Oh, I like that.
It's about being consumed by a passion for him.
So it's like going all in.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Okay. So this beatitude is really challenging us then to examine our own hearts.
It is.
To ask ourselves, what are we truly hungry for in our lives?
Are we seeking fleeting pleasures? Or are we seeking a deeper, more lasting fulfillment?
And are we willing to put in the effort to pursue that deeper fulfillment?
That's the key, because this hunger and thirst for righteousness, it requires action.
It's not just feeling.
Right. It's a commitment to seeking God's will in every area of our lives.
And that can be hard.
It can be very hard.
Because it means giving up our own desires and submitting to God's authority.
Yeah, it's a daily surrender.
A daily surrender.
But the promise is that we will be filled.
Okay, so what does that mean, filled?
I think it means experiencing the fullness of God's presence and his love.
Like a deep satisfaction.
Yeah, a satisfaction that the world can't offer.
Okay, so it's worth the effort then.
Definitely.
Okay, cool. So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Dr. Mounts says that he struggles with loving Jesus more than his own family at times.
Wow.
What do you think about that?
I think it's incredibly honest.
Yeah.
And it shows that even someone like Dr. Mounts, who's a renowned Bible scholar.
Right.
Still struggles with these things.
So it's not about like achieving perfection.
No, it's about being honest about our struggles and relying on God's grace to help us grow.
And I think that's really encouraging.
Me too, because it means that none of us are alone in this journey.
Yeah, we're all works in progress.
Exactly. And that's okay.
Yeah. So that's the first four. Beatitudes, poor in spirit, those who mourn the meek, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness.
What a foundation.
I know, right? It's a lot to chew on.
It is.
But it's good stuff.
It is.
Okay, so let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and dive into the next four.
Sounds good. Welcome back. So we left off talking about hungering and thirsting for righteousness.
Hmm. Yeah, like really craving that deeper connection with God.
Right. And it's interesting how Dr. Mounce connects that idea to the next beatitude.
Oh, which one is that?
Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy.
Okay, so the idea is that, like, the more we experience God's mercy and grace, the more we're able to extend that to others.
Exactly. He actually says you can't truly offer mercy unless you've first received it yourself.
That makes sense. Like, you can't give what you don't have.
Right. And it's not about being a pushover or letting people walk all over you.
Right.
It's about reflecting the compassionate heart of God in our interactions with others.
But that can be so hard, you know?
It is. It's definitely a challenge.
Especially when we've been hurt or wronged by someone.
Yeah, it's so much easier to hold on to anger and resentment.
It feels natural almost.
It does, but that's where the transformative power of God's grace comes in.
So how does that work?
Well, when we experience God's forgiveness, it empowers us to forgive others.
Like, it breaks the cycle of bitterness and resentment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it allows us to see the other person through the lens of God's love.
So it's not about suppressing our feelings or pretending that we haven't been hurt.
No, it's about allowing God's grace to work in us and through us.
Then that can take time.
It definitely can. Dr. Mounce emphasizes that forgiveness is a process, not a one-time event.
Yeah, I can see that.
It might take effort and prayer and a lot of patience.
Speaking of processes, Dr. Mounce even mentioned a story about a man who forgave a drunk driver who killed three members of his family.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
I know, right? I'm so curious to hear more about that.
He doesn't go into a ton of detail in this lecture.
Oh, okay.
But he uses it to illustrate the radical nature of true forgiveness.
So it's not about condoning the wrong,
oh,
but about choosing to release the offender from our judgment.
And trusting God to handle the situation.
That's a powerful example.
It really is. It shows how the Beatitudes can challenge us to live differently.
Yeah.
To respond to difficult situations with grace and compassion, even when it feels impossible.
And it highlights the interconnectedness of the Beatitudes, too.
How so?
Well, we see how hungering for righteousness and receiving God's mercy naturally leads to extending that same mercy to others.
Absolutely. It's all part of that golden chain we were talking about.
Okay, so we've got mercy covered. What's next?
The sixth beatitude is, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God.
Okay, pure in heart. So when I hear that, I immediately think about, like, avoiding certain behaviors or thoughts.
I think that's a common reaction.
Yeah, but I have a feeling Dr. Mounce has a deeper perspective on this one.
You're right. He points out that true purity goes beyond outward actions.
Okay, so what does he mean?
It's about aligning our desires, our motives, and our intentions with God's will.
So it's not just about what we do.
No, it's about why we do it.
Then about making sure our hearts are truly devoted to God.
Above all else.
So it's like that idea we talked about earlier, hungering and thirsting for righteousness.
Exactly. It's about making our relationship with God the central focus of our lives.
And the amazing promise attached to this beatitude is that we will see God.
Pretty incredible, right?
It is, but what does that mean exactly?
Well, that's a question that has been debated for centuries.
I bet.
Some people believe it refers to seeing God face to face in heaven.
Okay.
Others believe it's something we can experience here and now.
Like a glimpse of God's glory in our everyday lives.
Exactly. And Dr. Mounce doesn't really go into detail in this lecture about, like, the specifics of what it means to see God.
Okay.
But I think it's safe to say that it encompasses both a present and a future reality.
So the more we purify our hearts, the more attuned we are to God's presence.
And the more clearly we see his hand at work in the world around us.
And of course, ultimately, we believe we will see him face to face in eternity.
That's the ultimate hope.
I love that idea. The more we purify our hearts, the more we're able to perceive the beauty and wonder of God's creation.
Both now and in the future.
And it highlights the transformative power of the Beatitudes, too.
In what way?
Well, they're not just nice sayings, you know. They're meant to reshape our hearts and minds.
To help us see the world through God's eyes.
I like that. Okay, so we've explored mercy and purity of heart. What's next?
The seventh beatitude is, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God.
Peacemakers, this one feels especially relevant in today's world.
It does. There's so much division and conflict everywhere you look.
Yeah, it's like everyone's at odds with each other.
But what does it actually mean to be a peacemaker?
Yeah. What does Dr. Mounce say about that?
Well, he emphasizes that it's not about being passive or avoiding conflict altogether.
Oh, okay. So it's not about just like keeping quiet and hoping things will blow over.
No, true peacemaking often requires courage and a willingness to step into difficult situations.
So it's about actively seeking reconciliation.
Exactly. It's about bridging divides and promoting understanding between people.
And that can be hard.
It can be very hard, especially when emotions are running high.
But it's so important.
It is, because without peacemakers, our world would be in even worse shape than it is now.
So how do we become peacemakers in our own lives?
Well, Dr. Mount says it starts with our own hearts.
Okay.
We need to cultivate a spirit of peace within ourselves.
And how do we do that?
Through prayer, through spending time with God, through allowing His love to fill us.
So that we can then overflow that peace onto others.
Exactly. And it's not just about global or political conflicts either.
Right.
Peacemaking can start in our own homes.
In our relationships.
Exactly. In our workplaces, in our communities.
So it's about how we handle disagreements with our family members.
Right.
How we respond to conflict in our workplaces. Right. How we interact with people who hold different viewpoints than our own.
It's about seeking understanding rather than trying to win an argument.
And the reward for being a peacemaker is pretty amazing. They will be called children of God.
Wow, that's powerful.
It is. It speaks to the very essence of our identity as Christians.
When we reflect God's peacemaking nature in the world,
we truly embody our relationship with Him as His beloved children.
That's beautiful.
It is. Okay, so we've covered mercy, purity of heart, and peacemaking.
Honestly.
The final beatitude in this golden chain.
The eighth one. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
Okay, persecuted. That's not exactly a feel-good topic.
No, it's not something we like to think about.
But it's a reality for many Christians around the world.
It is, and it's something that Jesus himself warned his followers about.
He said that they would face opposition and persecution because of their faith.
But he wasn't just talking about mild disapproval either.
Right, he was talking about real, tangible persecution.
Like imprisonment, torture, even death.
So how does Dr. Mounts explain why Jesus calls those who are persecuted blessed?
He points out that persecution is often a sign that we are living out our faith authentically.
Okay.
When our beliefs and actions challenge the status quo.
When we refuse to compromise our convictions.
We are bound to encounter resistance.
So it's not about seeking out persecution, but about understanding that it might come as a natural consequence of living a life that is radically different from the world's standards.
And the promise attached to this beatitude is incredibly powerful. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
It's a reminder that our ultimate hope and reward are not found in this world,
but in the eternal kingdom of God.
It makes me think about the stories of the early Christians who faced incredible persecution.
Yet their faith only grew stronger.
They found joy and strength in knowing that their suffering was not in vain.
That they were citizens of a kingdom that could not be shaken.
It's a powerful reminder for us today.
It is. We may not all face the same level of persecution as the early Christians,
but we can still find encouragement in knowing that we are part of something much bigger than ourselves.
A kingdom that will endure forever.
All right, so we're back, and we made it through all eight Beatitudes with Dr. Mounts.
Eight? It's quite the journey, you know, going through all of them.
Yeah, and he covers so much in his lecture. Like, I'm still processing a lot of it. But
me too.
I guess the big question now is, okay, so we've heard all these blessings, right? Like,
yeah.
We've unpacked them a little bit, but how do we actually, like, put this into practice, you know?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It is, because these blessings seem so radical, you know?
Yeah, they do.
Like, how can we really live them out in our, like, modern world?
I think that's something we all grapple with, right?
Yeah.
It's easy to, like, admire the Beatitudes from a distance.
Right.
But living them out in the messy reality of our lives is a whole other challenge.
Totally. And Dr. Mounts doesn't really, like, give us a step-by-step guide or anything.
No.
But I do appreciate how he emphasizes this idea that the Christian life is a journey, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have to have it all figured out overnight.
No.
But we can just keep taking small steps, learning from our mistakes, and allowing God's grace to, like, shape us.
I agree. It's not about achieving perfection.
Right.
But about allowing God to work in and through us.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a really freeing thought.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Because it takes the pressure off of us to, like, be perfect.
It does.
And it allows us to just focus on, like, growing and becoming more like Christ.
Exactly. Remember that image of the wild stallion being tamed?
Oh, yeah.
It's about surrendering our will to God's guidance. allowing him to transform us from the inside out.
Okay, so how does that transformation actually happen?
Well, that's a great question. And I think it starts with recognizing our need for God's grace.
Okay.
Like, we can't manufacture these qualities on our own.
Right.
We need his power working in us.
So, like, what does that look like practically?
Well, prayer, Bible study, worship.
Yeah.
These aren't just religious rituals.
Okay.
They're ways of connecting with the source of our transformation.
Like, we're immersing ourselves in God's presence.
Right.
And allowing his character to rub off on us.
Exactly. And as we do that, we'll start to see those beatitudes being lived out in our lives.
But I still wonder, like, how does that actually translate into concrete actions, you know?
Well, let's take the example of peacemaking. Imagine you're in a heated argument with a family member. Instead of reacting defensively,
right,
try pausing and asking yourself, what would it look like to embody God's peacemaking heart in this situation?
Whoa, that's such a good question.
Yeah, it immediately shifts our focus.
Like, from winning the argument,
right,
to seeking understanding and reconciliation.
Exactly. It's not about suppressing our feelings or ignoring injustice.
Right.
But about responding in a way that reflects God's love and wisdom.
Yeah. And that might mean listening more intently, speaking with kindness,
yeah,
or seeking compromise.
It's about transforming conflict rather than avoiding it.
I love that.
It's about choosing to be a bridge builder instead of contributing to the division.
Yeah. And I think we can apply that same principle to other beatitudes as well.
Absolutely.
Like, when we're tempted to gossip, we can ask ourselves, what would it look like to be pure in heart in this moment?
Yeah.
Or when we're feeling discouraged, we can remind ourselves, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted.
Exactly. It's like the Beatitudes become a lens through which we view the world.
Yeah.
Guiding our choices, shaping our responses to everyday challenges.
And here's what I find so fascinating.
What's up?
Dr. Mounds kind of hints at this too, but as we practice these Beatitudes, they start to become less about effort and more about a natural overflow of our transformed hearts.
I think that's true. It's like a fruit tree that, once rooted and nourished, naturally produces delicious fruit.
I love that analogy. So yeah, it's not about gritting our teeth and trying to be good,
no,
but about allowing God's grace to change us from the inside out, so that these virtues flow naturally from who we are becoming.
Exactly. And that's a lifelong process.
Yeah.
A journey of growth and transformation.
We're not going to get it perfect every time,
no,
but we keep practicing. Keep relying on God's grace. Keep seeking his guidance.
And we can find encouragement in those promises attached to each beatitude. It's a reminder that our efforts are not in vain.
Right. God sees our struggles, our efforts to live differently, and he promises to bless us.
It's like we're investing in a kingdom that can't be shaken.
Mm-hmm.
We're planting seeds that will bear fruit for eternity.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling incredibly inspired.
Me too.
This deep dive into the Beatitudes has been so insightful.
Yeah, it's definitely given me a lot to ponder.
Me too.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up, I want to leave everyone with this thought. The Beatitudes aren't a destination, but a direction. They point us toward the life God intends for us, a life of joy and peace and purpose.
And that journey starts with a single step.
Yeah.
So choose one beatitude that resonates with you today.
Okay.
And ask God to show you how you can live it out.
Mm-hmm.
You might be surprised by the adventures that await you on this path of blessing.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been a great conversation.
It has. And until next time, keep seeking, keep growing, and keep discovering the transformative power of the Beatitudes in your own life.